for tuning in. I'm Tracy May, CEO of the Diversitas Group, and today we're talking about perfectionism and burnout, the critical link. According to a recent Deloitte survey, 87% of professionals say that they have a passion for their current job, yet 77% of these same people also say they've experienced burnout in the same job and frequently feel stressed out. Since COVID-19, the lines between work and home have blurred in new and unexpected ways, and many employees who are working remotely for the first time are struggling to preserve healthy boundaries between their professional and personal lives. Today, we're again speaking with Alex Regal, a senior L&D advisor based here in Dubai, who experienced burnout for himself. In part two of this interview, I asked Alex to share what has been supportive in his recovery from burnout and what advice he would give to those who are concerned about or perhaps even experiencing burnout for themselves. Okay, so I have with me today for the second part of the interview, Alex Regal, who spoke to us last time about his experience of burnout and the kind of signs and symptoms along the way to burnout and his actual experience of the situation. And today we're going to be looking at his recovery. What happened? How did that unfold? What was important about that? And learn perhaps gain some insights as to what is important once you have hit the wall. I mean, if you can avoid hitting the wall, even better. If you can't, which for many people, their first time experience is unexpected. But if you have hit the wall, what now? You know, where do you go from here? So thanks for being with us again, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
And tell us a little bit about, you know, from the moment you hit the wall, what the next steps were for you in terms of your recovery.
The day I burnt out, I was between two feelings. The first one was it was the end of the road, as in I couldn't see anything else past that day. At the same time, I was diving into the unknown, and I discovered an entirely new world, which I had heard about, but never experienced for myself, never really understood who does what in this world. The first thing I did was trying to remain on the good side of the law, because what I knew was that I could not go to work the day after or the day after that. At the time, I thought maybe a week, ideally two. It's been 15 months, right? So the first thing I did was I went to see a GP, someone I knew through my past few years here. Whenever I needed a checkup or something like that, I went in and I just started talking, and the floodgates opened. So she referred me to a number of psychologists, a number of psychiatrists, and she warned me that recovery would take long, it would be difficult, although I would be fine eventually. Right? And that kept me going for a few days. What's interesting, though, is that some of the people, mostly at work, who had seen the incoming signs, after a couple of weeks of not seeing me in the office, just reached out and asked me what was really going on. What's interesting is that the first thing I realized, and I called my mom right away, I actually apologized to her because I realized in the last few years, although I was trying to help her through her burnout, I had just realized you have just burnt out. So what you thought burnout was is completely different, right? Yes. So I tried my best to just accept what was happening. Mm-hmm. That was step number one. The thing is, at that stage, I had developed three pathological mental health conditions, which meant my emotions were all over the place, right? Some days I was suicidal. I have had several suicidal episodes. Maybe 3 days later, I was enlightened and borderline seeing God. I'm not a religious person. But yeah, the span between positive and negative emotions was extremely wide. And the cycles were very short and very acute one way or another.
Mm.
Now, luckily...
It must have been very terrifying for you.
It has been.
Yeah.
It has been. Especially when you recognize there are cycles.
Mm.
So when you start feeling good, you enjoy feeling good until the moment you realize you're actually feeling much better than usual, which means that the next bad wave is coming, which actually tends to bring it about faster and much worse as well, right? So for a while, the idea was just to rest as much as possible, to regain some form of stability. Many ways have been offered to me, one of which being medication. Although medication will just help you manage the emotions to do the actual fundamental work, which goes through psychotherapy. That was the second biggest step in my recovery. I was warned that finding a psychologist would be harder than finding a girlfriend. I had no idea how much.
That's very funny.
I think I saw three or four different psychiatrists before landing on someone I felt comfortable talking to and someone I felt would understand what I was going through.
So it's that understanding. You know, you spoke earlier in the breakdown phase about this really strong judgment and the need, you know, the, obviously the implied need to be in a, be accepted. So when you say the right psychologist...
Well, first psychiatrist, because the psychiatrist is the one who can prescribe psychology. Although I knew psychology what was what I really needed, I still had to jump through a series of hoops. And it took all I had. Right? It took all I had.
That in itself, going through the medical system and going from doctor to doctor in itself is a stressful process.
Yes, because I was not aware of the actual medical system. Well, I was aware to a certain extent, but I didn't exactly know what the insurance would cover, what, how I can, if I even can challenge an insurance decision, which at the end of the day I did several times and won, if I may say so. But I was in no state to discover that kind of stuff. And I'm lucky that people walked the path with me. And some people offered to contact the insurance for me. Some friends. One particular receptionist in the neuroscience center I went to for my recovery took me by the hand, literally two or three times, because I was having anxiety attacks in the office. Well, in the office, in the clinic, because insurance had just declined to cover a significantly large amount, and I just couldn't cope with it. At the beginning, you know, she told me just call the insurance, and I wasn't able to. I was terrified, like a child who's scared to go to see mom and dad because they've just broken the vase, right? Absolutely powerless and just waiting for final judgment. So that was extremely challenging. There is a big importance in this notion that you can exist without judgment. Unfortunately, when it comes to the medical system, having a mental health condition, you do not have an X-ray or a blood test that says that you are indeed in pain. So some of the psychologists and some of the psychiatrists that I saw challenged me and actually put me under even more pressure. Right. One of them prevented me from even building the courage to go try another one for a full month because I was traumatized. Right. At the same time, I do understand that they need to challenge people to be sure that no one is playing the system. Otherwise, it's a bit too easy.
It makes a really strong point, though, for advocacy. You know, in some medical settings and some cultures, I'm thinking of... New Zealand, particularly, where, which I'm familiar with, the idea of patients having advocates is very well accepted. And I'm just thinking in terms of mental health issues, how important it would be to have an advocate in the recovery process to walk with you through these challenging situations, an advocate on your behalf when you can't.
I had, let's call them informal advocates, people who offered to help in specific situations, but it brought a new set of challenges, having to catch everyone up to speed, bring everyone up to speed so that they could help me briefly or in specific events. Advocacy would definitely help because then, you know, I was in a situation where it was impossible for me to prove what I was made of.
Mm-hmm.
I felt all my worth is given to me through external eyes. But when I'm finding myself alone in front of a psychiatrist, how can anyone just concur, you know, just testify that, yes, his mental state has been deteriorating? So that's been extremely difficult. It took me... I burnt out at the end of February. I started psychotherapy at the beginning of May 2019.
It's quite a big gap.
Yeah. And
3 month gap.
Two, March, April. End of two and a half, basically.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, semantics. I was lucky enough, and I was about to give up, not knowing what I would do, but just sort of learn to live with it. Because I couldn't find anyone who I felt was willing and able to help me. Some people were willing, but they were not mental health professionals, or they were friends, or they were my mom, which is not their role to play.
Mm.
Right? When the check engine light is on in your car, you go to the garage.
Mm. Mm.
When it's on in your head, where do you go?
Mm.
Right? So eventually, my last resort was bypassing a psychiatrist to go straight to a psychologist I had heard a lot of great things about. And when I saw him, he recommended the psychiatrist he works with. And within the span of a couple of days, I saw the psychologist and the psychiatrist again.
Mm-hmm.
Then the psychologist, sorry, the psychologist first, then the psychiatrist, and then back to the psychologist. And I could see they were working together.
Mm-hmm.
I could see they were not questioning my current state of mind. They were making sure I was for real, but they were not pushing the boundaries onto me.
Mm.
They were giving me a space to exist in my suffering, in my incomprehension, and I could tell they were using frameworks and looking for specific keywords, specific feelings, specific answers. Some other professionals asked me the same questions, but I never felt like they were listening to the answers.
Mm.
Right?
So something about the way they interacted with you was really important. Being understood, being trusted.
Absolutely. And this is, once again, not a comment on the professionalism of the previous professionals I saw. It's a matter of fit. The same goes with a relationship, be it a romantic relationship, a coaching relationship. There has to be chemistry.
Mm.
And I found chemistry there, which is where I ended up going regularly. Now, the challenge was that I thought burnout was the lowest low. It wasn't. My conditions worsened. They developed completely unbridled until I started psychotherapy. So from burnout to...
So that's a long stretch to be in a hole.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't sleep anymore. I couldn't eat anymore. I was scared of my own shadow. Right? I got scared in Dubai Mall.
Mm.
I was just on high alert.
Mm.
I felt like I was being, you know, when you have the headlights in your head.
Rabbit in headlights sort of feeling.
That feeling, yes, but I could physically sense too much light in my eyes.
Mm.
I was being blinded. Exactly.
Yeah.
Blinded by the ambient light, which is objectively not that ambient. I could hear absolutely everything. I was jumping at any sound, etc. And
so
I was with a friend.
So your whole nervous system is on high alert.
Completely high
sensory
alert.
Sensory overload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I needed to feel safe. Lucky for me, I was with a friend that day.
Yeah.
I asked her to drive me home, which she did. I bolted, literally, from her car to the door to my apartment. I closed the door and I curled up into a ball for 2 hours because I had no idea what was going on. And I was exhausted.
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, so the hole was very long and it was very difficult to live a somewhat normal life, to figure out the next step.
Mm.
When I finally started therapy, I was dragging myself to the psychologist, even though I would... to this day still take a bullet for him.
Mm.
Right? He didn't do the job for me. He just helped me through it. Mm. But he was the key to it, right? Mm. Through the right methodologies, therapies, etc.
Mm.
Just helped me see the light again. However, those sessions were exhausting, typically lasting between an hour and an hour and a half. I would need 4 hours to sleep after that.
Mm. Right? So it sounds like, we think about recovery, we think about coming up the other side of the curve. What I'm hearing you say is you spent quite a long time on the bottom of the curve. Mm. And then recovery sounds a lot like you had to do some work.
I had a lot of work to do. I had to drag myself to the psychologist every week. And I negotiated with myself each and every time because I knew... Eventually, I had some experience in it, and I knew the hardest part was to get into my car,
mm.
park, sit down in the chair. And once I was in the chair, the session would just go.
Mm.
And I would come out feeling much better, empowered, having new insights before, everything kind of settles. And then you come back for the next step the week after, etc. Mm. But I had to negotiate with myself, literally using carrots. Right. Well, sorry, literally using the metaphorical carrot.
Yeah.
My deal with myself was you go to the psychologist and when you're done with it, you go to the barber and you will sit down for 45 minutes and you'll have a nice head shave, a beard trim, a little, neck and shoulder massage and everything just to unwind because I needed that.
So almost becoming your own advocate. If you do this, I will give you this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I still have some mechanisms to this day. They're not, they are not as ever present, right? I managed to do the daily small things quite well. I've managed to do some work recently actually as well. But I still have some little things that I know became routine because I observed the reverse triggers, in a way, right? I was not aware of the triggers, and I discovered what worked for me.
Mm. Sounds like your self-awareness was a really, developing your self-awareness in recovery was a really key component.
Absolutely. The big difference between now and a year and a half ago is that I forced myself to accept any emotion that I have.
Okay, so that's interesting. So acceptance...
Acceptance as opposition, by opposition with judgment, right? If I feel depressed, I'm depressed.
Mm,
but I'm not a depressed person.
Yeah, today, so you have emotions, but they don't have you.
Exactly, right? If I feel depressed one day, I'll probably grind a little.
Mm.
But then eventually I'll just become aware and think, you're having a bad day. So I know, automatically speaking, what am I doing? Did I drink enough water? Have I had enough food? Have I slept enough last night? Do I need to go outside and be in the sun a little?
Mm.
Do I need to get distracted? So I just allow the emotion to live, but I don't follow it down the rabbit hole. Right? Mm. So I know this day is not a day I'm going to make a big decision.
Mm.
Right? If I am under pressure for whatever reason, the day I catch myself being in a bit of a, call it a downward spiral, I'll just go through the day and that will be success enough.
It sounds like listening to you, the narrative, the internal narrative in your recovery versus the internal narrative in your decline, if you like, such a different conversation. I mean, now you're going, have I had enough sleep? Did I drink enough water? Okay, I'm having this emotion and today I'll be kind to myself.
What's really funny is that about 3.5 or 4 years ago, my mom warned me that she was seeing burnout patterns in my behavior, in my discourse as well, in anything I was doing. And I just always brushed it to the side saying, listen, I've seen you. I'm not going the same way, so it's not going to happen to me.
Hmm.
Right.
Mm.
Until the day I actually told her word per word, I decide what I do. My head decides and my body follows.
Interesting. So very much around, my body will obey my head until it couldn't anymore obey your head.
Exactly.
And now it sounds like you actually are checking in with your body.
It's completely the opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
I build upon my well-being. Sure, there are lots of things I would like to do. I will do them in due course. And before that, I am making sure that my mental health is in check. I was talking about cycles earlier, having very low lows and very high highs in very short cycles. The cycles are much longer now. I'll go for a few weeks being reasonably well, and then maybe a couple of weeks being somewhat depressed, you know, lacking a bit of inertia, just some momentum to keep me going. And that's fine. I accept them. Lucky enough, because I am not in a state of, let's call it, sanitary emergency. Right? I am still able to sustain myself, to find ways to just wait. And that's probably the most important thing that was said to me. About a month after I burnt out, I had lunch with a colleague much higher than me, much higher than me in the hierarchy, who had experience with burnout, and he told me, you need to give yourself time because you need to identify what doesn't work for you. You need to identify what works for you. And as much as possible, you need to not give yourself a deadline. That has been extremely difficult to do because I was going from visa extension to my next salary, or then, you know, what can I do to remain legally in the country? Do I have enough money to have some food? Oh, I haven't set foot in the office in 9 months. How will I explain a gap on my CV? Right? And those are all false deadlines, which used to be very pressure and stress inducing in the first few months. I manage them a bit better now. Right? I give myself time. If I have an opportunity that I want to pursue, I will try it, but I will not force myself. Right? As a matter of fact, there are things I used to do before that I don't do anymore. There are things I didn't do before that I do now. There are things I've wanted to do before, and I always prevented myself from it because what is society going to think? Society doesn't live through me. I live my life, right? And out of 7.5 billion people in the world, we can find people to be accepted with. Accepted by, sorry.
It sounds like, you know, I mean, it sounds like it was a really challenging experience, but what's coming out the other side for me is it sounds like your orientation towards yourself, the world around you, even your orientation towards time has changed. And just as we bring this segment to a close, I guess the question I really want to ask as a final question is, yes, it was a really traumatic experience, but what is the best thing that you've taken away from this experience that, you know, is for you something that is really precious and important?
I feel legitimate being myself now. The most curious thing in all that was that before I burnt out, and let's say even before I had this final stretch towards burnout, I was not even aware that I felt underconfident. Right? I know that I had periods of my life where I would come across as overconfident. Call it cocky, call it whatever you want. It was just a defense mechanism to hide an intrinsically, very deeply rooted insecurity because I had always sought existence through external eyes. Now, this episode is teaching me to be at peace with who I am. And people come along, some people have distanced themselves. What would have felt like a betrayal before, I actually respect now. If someone is uncomfortable being next to a friend who, you know, to put it in very familiar terms, became crazy, they can't cope with it. That's fine. Don't do harm to yourself, because if you do, you will do harm to me as well. So let me just exist.
So it's not just about accepting yourself. There's something about also just accepting of where people are at.
I haven't,
how they interpret reality.
Yeah, but that's a happy coincidence.
Mm.
I would say that's a bonus. It came along, right? I never worked on that.
Mm. It's just a natural byproduct of you accepting yourself.
It is exactly a byproduct, right? The more I've removed self-judgment from my daily thoughts, from my activities, from what I say to people, the more I've been empathetic towards people who just inform people of where their boundaries are. Mm.
Mm.
You know, the fact that someone puts a boundary in front of me, for example, doesn't mean that they are attacking me in any way.
Mm.
Right? Maybe they're not giving me as much space as I would like to, but they are not doing that against me. They're doing it to protect themselves.
Mm.
I can only respect that because I'm doing the same thing.
Mm, lovely. So this is a whole new relationship with boundaries, accepting yourself, accepting where others are. And I bet you if we had a room full of people and I asked people to raise their hands if they would like to be more accepting of themselves, the entire room would put up their hand. Nobody wants to come at this or come to this wonderful place through a journey of pain. But it sounds like if you have the courage to confront yourself and the courage to be honest about what's going on for you, then yes, it will still be painful, but it's pain with a purpose. And on the other side of that are some really incredible breakthroughs that really can set you up for the rest of your life. You don't have to go through this pain again and again.
Absolutely.
So, Alex, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your experience and having the courage to speak from a really authentic place about your own life in the hope that, you know, this will be a light to others. It'll give a way forward to others. And I just think it's so important in this time that we have human-to-human conversations. And I really thank you for putting up your hand to do just that and share that with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been in my heart for a while now.
Yeah, thank you. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the series on perfectionism and burnout and the critical link between the two. You can find other interesting resources relating to diversity and inclusion on our website, www.thediversitasgroup.com. If you'd like to learn more about how we can help you and support you to understand your diversity dynamics and foster inclusive leadership behaviors in your organization, please feel free to get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.